You're listening to Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. This is episode 15. What are my questions?
You know, it's funny how the thing that you think that is not interesting to anyone else is probably the thing that is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I was saying that I want it to be richer.
Yeah.
It's like the word that keeps coming to mind, or that seems to sum it up, is a richer experience of making it and of listening to mm-hmm. it. And I think that the richness, of course, comes from, like then you have to ask yourself, like, what does it mean to be rich? Like, what makes a piece of literature rich, or a listening experience rich? What makes life rich, you know? Mm-hmm. So what is it? It's variety.
Right.
It's depth.
It's a sort of density, isn't it?
It's a density, yeah.
Yeah.
Like rich fabrics, exactly, or a room that's richly decorated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a sort of density, not too much, but there's a kind of, it's a cozy feeling. So same with Lit Up, as I'd like it to be something that feels a little more artful, a little more rich, and something that you can kind of get lost in. And curating that kind of experience for people it's powerful, and it's not, I don't want to say it's hard, but it's not just necessarily a given.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can do it just because you want to.
Yeah.
or that, you know, I can just sit down and just talk extemporaneously, and then it's going to be a rich experience. But I think that, you know, you're onto something here with just, like, recording the, the unpolished version of things.
Yeah.
Help. Yeah, thinking aloud. I've interviewed 14 people, and all of them I consider friends.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, these are people who are just normal people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're all doing some kind of art or some kind of self-development, like either they're writers or directors or actors.
Mm-hmm.
With Tate, mm-hmm. she was becoming a yoga instructor and had a really cool year of self-development, and that was something I was interested in hearing about and talking about. I think the issue is really, like, is the platform really getting across what I wanted to get across? Because, you know, if you interview a celebrity, the purpose of that interview is to give people, like, some way to chew on something that they really are already very hungry for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh man, Brad Pitt is so fascinating and he's so amazing, and I want to listen to this interview and I want to hear how he thinks and what he eats for breakfast and what he reads, you know, at night.
Yeah.
But when you're interviewing normal people, even if you couch it under, like, these are normal people having extraordinary experiences,
mm-hmm.
you know, like life-changing, writing books, finding out, you know, deeper versions of themselves. It's still life-changing in a very personal way.
Right.
You know, I'm not interviewing people who, like, were over in the Sudan, you know, or who,
mm-hmm.
I haven't even interviewed anyone who's, like, been about, like, you know, coming out or, you know, some kind of racial violence. The closest we came was when Julian Foster came out and talked about his book. I guess that's the idea, is that it should be interesting to hear about normal people having extraordinary, in the sense that this is relatively new in our culture,
mm-hmm.
to have everyday people who aren't monks and nuns or ascetics having pretty deep and pretty rapid personal change.
Mm-hmm.
going on. And the purpose of Follow Your Bliss, which, you know, was my newsletter / magazine back in 2000, from like 2010, 2012. And it seems to be part of my mission is to kind of encapsulate these stories to normalize it and to also help others. But having said this, I think, you know, when I look back, when I think about what I read, what I like to read, it's honestly like kind of boring. Like when I open a newspaper and someone's interviewing someone and I want to know why I should care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want it to be more than just this person had an experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to feel
there's some sort of hook,
a little more relative than I might be having a similar experience. And so, you know, this doesn't mean that there's no place for interviewing or that I have to just try to interview, you know, celebrities. Because, I mean, I even have friends who are doing pretty big things. Like, you know, when I interviewed Jessica about, and she has thousands of followers online mm-hmm. for her Dining Traveler website. And that episode's still, it didn't break any records, you know? So I think the idea, the approach of Lit Up was broad enough that I could talk to a lot of people, but maybe it's too diffuse. And even like Terry Gross, like on Fresh Air is gonna,
right.
They're all gonna be, well, I mean, Fresh Air, she'll, does she interview non art? Is it only the arts? She interviews a lot of people.
A lot of different people.
A lot of people, but they're topically interesting. They're famous.
Not always.
Really?
Sometimes it's that someone's written a book about something or.
Okay, I consider that famous.
Okay. But like they're on not for their personality.
They're there to talk about their topic. You're right. I've been talking to people about their experience of transformation because that's what I find interesting. But on shows like Fresh Air, people are there because they want to, you know, they want to learn more about the topic. And maybe possibly because of the personality of it. Again, I was really hoping the takeaway from my show would be to inspire people. And it has. I've gotten some. It's not like I haven't gotten good feedback within a certain framework, but it's like I was saying before, you know, there seems to be this, like, I can't seem to cap like 40, 60 listenings per show.
Mm-hmm.
I can't seem to, I mean, go beyond that. And it was sort of the same when I was blogging. I felt like I could never get more than 20 or 40, you know, reads on a blog post. And I really do think that these things move in plateaus. And I think that it's like, it's also my responsibility as a creator of content
mm-hmm.
to be trying to get closer and closer to the core of the closer and closer, I guess, to the my audience and to really reaching and connecting and creating something people that's a overlap between who I am and what they want or what they need or wants and needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny when I ask when I run a book promotion workshop,
mm-hmm.
I ask my students to imagine their ideal reader.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, 9 times out of 10, the person they end up imagining is themselves, some version of themselves. It's like, you know, she'll be like, well, it's probably a woman. It's probably in her, you know, like in her 30s, and she probably has like a couple kids. And then she'll suddenly be like, oh, it's me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they're like, but I don't just want me, people like exactly me to read a book. I'm like, no, it's not just that people like you will read the book, but if you have this target, you will have a concise, clearer message, and then it will also reach out beyond. So yeah, I think that like who. So I do think that my ideal reader is, I mean, my ideal listener. It's a good question. Is someone who wants to be enriched, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to keep carrying this down. So like, they're probably going to listen on like a, you know, listen on a weekend with some coffee or tea, or put it on their phone and listen during a walk. So then it's probably someone that has a little more laid back, a sort of thoughtful person who maybe is a reader. So there's someone that loves literature, first of all, should be a part of it. And maybe now this is where I'm realizing that I'm trying to do two separate things with the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I want to entertain that person. So in other words, the Radiolab approach, where you're learning, but you're so entertained that you don't even realize. And you're learning, and they're always, your curators are always, always concerned with what does this mean about life now? What does this mean about, you know, what it makes this relevant? So the Radiolab episode in which, you know, they're talking about how ants communicate by throwing up in each other's mouths, you know, or how birds, you know, communicate when they're flying in formation by subtle movements. They relate it back to how humans can communicate in groups, what this means. And I think that's what it is that is really the hard part. That's the part that makes you like a genius academic, you know, or just really smart, is when you can take this specific thing and make it relevant.
Radiolab seems to start out not with any particular topic in mind. They start out with a question.
Yeah.
You know, and that question often takes them through different topics.
So they start out with a question, and then as they probably research and find answers, and then the answers naturally curate the structure of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's kind of awesome. Okay, so.
What are your questions?
So what are my questions? Two things I listen to are audiobooks, like fiction, and books on personal and spiritual development.
Mm-hmm.
So my desire has always been to try to link the two, hence lit up, you know, is a pun. But I'm wondering if like that's part of the problem, is that lit up is almost like a split personality in my mind. But maybe the answer is here in the question of a show, because a show could be like, which poems cross the divide between straight literature and transcendental experience. So we could start with Song of Myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a whole book called like Poets of the Ecstatic that I think I still have from college. It's full of poems about moving beyond the boundaries of self. that's great. You start with a question, you do your research, and the research and the answers form the... God, if I had done that, if I'd written my college papers that way, I probably would have done a lot better. I felt like in college they ask you to start out with an answer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I don't know, my school felt like they're like, you have to have a thesis statement, you have to have an argument.
No, that's how it goes. Yeah, they're like, you start out with an argument and then support it, and mostly it's you're just figuring out what's something you can say that then you can find enough evidence for.
Can you find enough evidence? And you know what? Like,
and
that's even how when I write, like, nonfiction, even when I wrote for Poly or Bliss, or when I do shows, and I've done like a lot of practice shows trying to talk about my work and my philosophies and things like that, and I definitely approach it as if I have to have an argument. Like, I have to have a set answer, and here's all the reasons why this is the case. Instead of starting out with here's a question, and here's my thinking, and plus my research as I explore some possible answers. It's funny because this brings me back to Tennessee Coates. His blog is on The Atlantic is him thinking aloud.
Yeah.
It's him. He asks questions and he thinks aloud through possible answers.
Yeah, I think the for him the point is not to be right. It's the trying to be right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's it's not just me, right? Like, we're taught that you have to be right or you shouldn't say anything at all.
Right. And kind of point was that you need to be wrong before you can be right.
Oh, I like that.
Like, you're going to get slapped around for being right, but you can't bypass that step.
You mean slapped around for being wrong?
For being wrong, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because if there's 70... doors in front of you, and one of them is the right door. You have to start opening doors.
Yeah.
And the chances that the first door you open is going to be right are very slim.
Right.
Yeah.
And there'll probably be people laughing at you for picking the wrong door.
Oh, I don't want to be laughed at.
Yeah.
But that's part of
and you're
my
like,
problem.
And then you just want to say, well,
yeah,
I'm not going to pick a door.
I'm not going to pick a door.
I'm not going to open a door until I know which one's the right one.
Yeah, so you
kind of... Because that's the typical approach.
Wait around, yeah.
But you're not going to...
And then you don't say anything. How come you never go there? How come I'm so lonely? And that's exactly it. That there is a love, a quality of... that I have in my business and in... my writing and in this podcast, where I really do want to be, I really want to play it small. I mean, I don't want to, but I'm my comfort zone. And I have people that are like, oh, you're really putting yourself out there, and that's so great. And I'm just like, I have a very protected community. You know, I put it on Facebook. People have known me forever and part of the literary community in Rochester. You know, when you put your work out there farther beyond people who already know you and are your friends, that's how you jump from that 60-person viewership or readership to 200 or to 1,000. But then you open yourself up again to people who are like, you did that wrong. I don't like what you did. I don't like what you said. I don't like how you said it. And I don't like you. The need to be perfect and always right self-protection, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really help anybody.
Dan Harmon's saying is, you'll be perfect when you're dead. It implies that there's some sort of completion when there isn't. Your two strands here, your literature and self-development, or even just creative arts and self-development, it seems like it's, the connection is not, it's not that far-fetched.
No, but maybe like what my job is to ask the question, how are they connected, and then show the audience. I think I just need to, and it would be fascinating for me to just not assume things, you know, assume that people already understand the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And also asking the question and weaving my way through the answers in a clearer way will be fun for me.
Mm.
And also I think will make a rich episodes. You know, not that every episode is about this particular topic, but it could be a way to start. I mean, there's other interesting questions to me too, like, there's a South African poet I wrote my master's thesis on. His last name is Niezwa. And he wrote this really beautiful, exploring his interiority pretty deeply. And he was influenced by the Spanish poet Cesar Vallejo. I think it might be interesting to look at poets that are like Niezwa writing in other cultures. What does self-development look like in South Africa? What does it look like in the Middle East, like in the United Arab Emirates? This deepening of self, which I believe to be a universal human experience. And then I also want to look at things like Alice in Wonderland and how freaking weird it is and how all the things it spawned and maybe talk a little bit about that. I mean, again, and it can return to the trope of the hero's journey as a wonderful universalizing motif. Alice goes into a nonsense universe. She basically loses her concept of self. Nothing in Wonderland is the world she knows. And that is exactly what it is like to break down your old self before you can move into a new portion of your consciousness, a new portion of your life. And so, you know, she goes there and eventually is able to return and to appreciate life and self in a new way. Using the literature as part of the show is, I think, important. Not just talking about it, but hearing sound clips, hearing readings. You know, I want them to put on a show and have it be like, you know, I just heard a recording of Wallace Stevens reading part of the Blue Guitar. And then some really interesting, it's like someone coming on and, you know, talking, telling me a little about Wallace Stevens at a time period. You know, not a class, but, you know, 5 minutes. And then putting it all together, and then, you know, the show puts it all together into some larger context about modernism. Talks about the movies that are other poems that were influenced by Wallace Stevens or the Blue Guitar, or how the Blue Guitar was influenced by Picasso, learn a little bit about Picasso. So these are just like things that are sort of fuzzy, shadowed images, thoughts in my head right now.
In the course of this talk, you've had a couple of realizations.
Yeah.
I feel like there's some sort of arc here.
Yeah.
You know.
And, you know, maybe the interviews, maybe this is the answer to interviews, is like just making it super relaxed, but doing it on a phone instead of a microphone.
Yeah.
Sitting on a comfortable couch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could just talk until you had a revelation.
Yeah, and then just cut it down to the revelation. Yeah. The people have come on my show have been so great and so forthcoming and just really on point, and I've really appreciated that. But yeah, I do feel like that there's, when you listen, people want something a little more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and having it feel more like, I'm interviewing you, and what's all, you know, what are you doing and how did you do it?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah, sitting with a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You have a question that, and
that we both are going to, you know, talk through.
Yeah.
And then you can learn about that person that way.
Right, yeah. It's less so like someone has something to present,
yeah,
rather than you are seeing the process of themselves, and you're seeing your personality against,
yeah,
you know, this person's personality. Not against, but working with or bouncing off.
That's what people want. Like, people don't like glossy advertising.
No.
Anymore. They don't want, like, hey, folks, coming down for 25% off the pool, you know?
Yeah.
They want, and they don't want, you know, an interview in which you feel like you're getting
PR answers.
PR answers, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a different way into authenticity, which is a quality of a natural, spontaneous dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't necessarily get to know the whole person's background, but you get a sense of who they are, naturally are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you hit on something.
We're going to call them couch sessions. We're going to be covered in pillows like we are now.
Couch sessions with Nina Alvarez.
That sounds either like therapy or sex work.
Maybe it's both.
Shuck.
You've been listening to Lit Up with Nina Alvarez on Rochester Free Radio. You can also find Lit Up on iTunes, SoundCloud, Podomatic, and at dreamyourbook.com. If you have any suggestions for future shows or any questions for me, you can contact Nina at nina@dreamyourbook.com. Have a quick and exciting announcement. I'm launching a space in the neighborhood of the arts called the Aurora Center for Creative and Spiritual Arts. First workshop is September 26th, 1 to 4. It's actually just called Creativity and Spirituality. And if that sounds like something you're interested in, you can find us online at alvareznina.wix.com/Aurora Center. That's a temporary website. Or just find us on Facebook, the Aurora Center. You know, in Rochester. That should get you there. Okay, so last thing, Rochester Free Radio is online at rochesterfreeradio.com. You can listen to my show and other shows streaming all day long. We're going to hopefully be broadcasting on the radio by the end of this year. We're still raising funds to get that going, so if you feel like you might have the inclination to donate, please go to rochesterfreeradio.com. Thanks for listening, and be really well.